Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. It's a great honor to...
You are listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
It's time for Empowered Hearts with Shannon Hart. After overcoming significant trauma, Shannon studied many forms of healing, working as a registered nurse for 13 years. She's passionate about helping you. Please welcome Shannon Hart back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. You are here with Shannon Hart from Empowered Hearts Mentoring. I hope you had a great February and are able to get through basically the winter. Where I am now, I recently moved from Edmonton to Victoria, and I thought I was leaving winter behind. And when Edmonton was in the minus 50 range for with wind chill, I thought that I had, you know, escaped. And only to be met with something like 25 centimeters of snow here in Victoria. So definitely excited for what March will bring. Lots of energies going on in the planet. And I'm recording this just before March 1st. I'm recording it the weekend before. So with the full moon, lots of time for resetting and releasing and just going inward and kind of trying to, I guess, look at ourselves a little bit more clearly. And so with that being said, what I wanted to talk about today might be a little bit uncomfortable. Might not sound that way, but as we kind of dig into it, you'll find that there are some definite things that aren't necessarily pretty, and being able to really dig in is where we are going to be able to do the work. So with that being said, what I'd like to talk about today, the topic is perfectionism. So if anybody out there is an admitted perfectionist, or even if you don't think that you have perfectionism or have any perfectionistic tendencies, that's going to be a really hard word to say throughout here. I encourage you to listen, because I myself did not think that I was perfectionistic at all. And I was very wrong. So what perfectionism tends to mean to some people is being a high achiever, being choosy, feeling that you deserve to have, you know, the best, having high standards, being particular, any of those things. And so if anybody out there already, you know, admits that that's how they are, then for sure there's definitely some perfectionist tendencies going out there. I'm a perfectionist. What can I say? You know, when you're detail-oriented and you have to do everything a certain way, that's kind of the phrase that gets thrown around. So if any of you have ever uttered any of those phrases, then for sure that's probably something you want to be listening into. Because on the surface, that might be what it seems like, but as we kind of dig deeper, you'll find that there's some other stuff that needs to be uncovered when it comes to perfectionism. So what I've noticed is some people really actually wear perfectionism like a badge of honor. So most people think, you know, if you're a perfectionist, it means, you know, you have to have the best, you have to like the best, never settle. Like I said, it means that you strive to get the best marks, have the best career, you know, have big dreams, set really high goals, shooting for the stars, all of that stuff. That's what a lot of people feel that being perfectionist is. And it can be that. And I want to make a disclaimer here. So anything that I say, there's nothing in here that is saying that, you know, having higher standards and setting goals and meeting these goals and working on yourself and all of that stuff. None of that stuff on the surface is bad. None of it, if it's coming from a healthy place, none of that is bad. Of course, we want to have nice things. Of course, we want to have a career that we love and, you know, that fulfills us. Of course, we want to have a family life that fulfills us. Of course, you know, we want to set goals for ourselves and improve ourselves and all of that stuff. None of that on the surface is wrong or bad. So I just want to make that very clear. What perfectionism is it's actually not coming from a healthy place. So where society kind of prides itself on things that aren't necessarily healthy, and this is definitely conditioning and something that I think needs to really be looked at. So attending, you know, the best college, university, you know, getting that high-paying job, excelling at your career, you know, giving 100%. And then when it comes to parenting, you know, also being that helicopter parent and, you know, making sure that your kids have the best this, have that, and even if it means that you're running yourself ragged. Having, you know, this work-life balance, but, you know, also caring about the environment and then also, you know, doing your taxes on time and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Just having it all being all. And a lot of that stems from how we were raised, I believe. I would hear my colleagues, you know, some of them saying, you know, the ones who would say, oh, I'm a perfectionist. So you'd also hear something about their personal lives. You know, they'd run home, they'd make supper, you know, organic from scratch. And, you know, they'd take their kids to all of the activities. They'd make their lunches, they'd have the house be spotless, and then, you know, of course they're going to work, and they're being like the perfect employee, you know, doing all the policies, knowing all the policies, being overly helpful. And, you know, like I would hear them talk about their personal lives, and I would see how, you know, perfect they wanted everything, and it just exhausted me even looking at them or listening to them, let alone living their lives. Just listening to their lives made me want to go home and have a nap. And I'm sure a lot of parents who have, you know, all of these things going on can relate to that. And, you know, we all want the best for our kids. We want the best for ourselves. And I think sometimes we kind of get lost in what's actually the best for everybody involved, especially when we are that overachiever that also has that giving tendency as people in healthcare and people who are empathic tend to be. So, but what I also was noticing with these same colleagues is that, you know, they'd also complain that, you know, they had to do everything. You know, they'd say, you know, my spouse doesn't help enough and I'm having to go home and I'm having to do this, I'm having to do that. You know, and if you'd ask them why their family members couldn't help, they'd say, oh, no, they can't do it properly. They don't do this right. You know, they don't load the dishwasher properly. There's that always that, right? And it just was easier for them to do it themselves. You know, it just was too exhausting to try to explain things, and they had a certain system, and, you know, it just was easier if they just did it themselves. And so if anybody is listening to this and this sounds familiar, I encourage you to keep listening, because there's definitely some more to it than just being, you know, picky on how you like things in your house. There's nothing wrong with having a tidy house, but when it comes to it being exactly a certain way, that's some perfectionism creeping in. And if you're not allowing other people to help you because of those reasons, then that's definitely something that needs to be looked at. So working as a nurse, I saw many of us who had perfectionistic tendencies, and many of us were in denial. So it's just like being an alcoholic. If you're in denial about, you know, your issue, then being a perfectionist, you know, wasn't a problem. So these colleagues that I'm talking about, like they might even identify themselves as perfectionists, but they don't see it as a problem. So that's part of the issue that I want to dig into, because, you know, it's really starting to affect our mental health, our physical health. And it's tricky, it's sneaky, it doesn't always show itself in that way. And so it's easy to see why people are fooled, and they're just kind of at the surface of what's underneath, because it can be insidious. I really never saw myself as a perfectionist. So while I'd see some colleagues who were very, you know, particular about how they did their dressing changes and how things looked and, you know, how they had patients set up and all of this stuff, you know, some of my colleagues were very particular about that, and I wasn't. I was like, okay, get them on the table. Okay, you know, is the dressing on? Is it dry? Okay, great. You know, I don't really care if there's a, you know, it's not exactly, you know, perfectly perpendicular or whatever. that didn't really matter to me. So, and I didn't really, you know, the details weren't super specific for me. I didn't really care as long as, you know, my patient was safe and, you know, the work that needed to be done got done. And it is the same, you know, at home, like I wasn't super clean. I like to have my house clean. Let's get, you know, I will say that, but, it didn't need to be exactly, you know, I wasn't labeling things in my house. I wasn't, you know, if there was a spoon out of place, you know, I wasn't like losing sleep over it or anything like that. And, you know, I didn't like, I kind of see perfectionists with people who, you know, they're always really well put together. You know, they have their hair done, they're dressed well. And, you know, I would go out of the house, like no makeup, no hair done, throw on a tube, you know, whatever. Like that was not me. So I definitely didn't look put together all the time. And, you know, I definitely didn't have super high aspirations. I wasn't very goal oriented. I wasn't one of those people. And I, you know, when it came to fitness and health and stuff too, I wasn't necessarily perfectionistic, or so I thought. So I, in my head, thought I was easygoing. But what I had to admit was that there were certain aspects of my life that were not great. My relationships weren't great. I was suffering in that department. And I realized that I was really unhappy, in my life. And so I started doing some digging and, you know, working with a psychologist and, you know, realizing that things were just, I was always just waiting until something was over. I was always just waiting until, like, I had to get through this. I had to get through this and then things would be okay. And I was never happy in the current moment because I was always waiting for something to be over. I was waiting to get through something. And I could never just accept the way things were at the time. I was always looking forward. And so my psychologist suggested that I had perfectionistic tendencies. And, you know, a lot of it stemmed from not being good enough or not feeling like I was good enough. And I scoffed at it. I was like, what? I'm not a perfectionist. Like, okay, yes. Like, I like to have, you know, I like certain things a certain way. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say I'm type A to the nth degree, but I did not think of myself as being a perfectionist. And when she said, you know, perfectionism isn't really what you think it is, it's not necessarily being detail-oriented and making excessive lists and stuff like, you know, it's not, and being super uber neat and tidy, like that's, she's like, it's there's more to it than that, you know, it's very sneaky, like she said, and it really stems from not feeling good enough, and I really struggled to accept that, because I knew that I felt, you know, not good enough, but I didn't really see myself as a perfectionist. So I wasn't connecting the dots. But once I really started digging into some of the exercises that she gave me, it all really started to make sense. So that's my hope for this broadcast, is that anybody's listening who might not necessarily think that they're a perfectionist, but if they suffer from certain tendencies, so procrastination is a big one, not feeling good enough, and we'll go through it a little bit more, but I encourage you to listen, because there's really a lot going on here, and it's worth looking at. So if you think you might be a perfectionist in the closet, listen as I list off some of the signs of being a perfectionist. And like I said, some of them are really sneaky. Some of the classic ones aren't. Some of them are pretty obvious. So the excessive list making, that kind of makes sense, right? You always have to kind of have everything organized in a certain way down to a T, to the point where, you know, you're making lists and you're doing more work based on how to organize than actually doing the organization, which I think is another form of procrastinating. And so being overly obedient, following policy to a T, that's another sign of perfectionism, having to be a certain way, having obviously to have things in a specific place, or, you know, having things a certain way. And that comes down to control as well. Because you have to make sure that everything's a certain way, because you can't cope if things are messy, or, you know, if you don't have that control in that sense. So yeah, cleaning, you know, some of those are the more of the obvious things, not letting others do things for you because they won't do it well enough. That sort of thing. But one of the big things behind perfectionism is procrastination. So if any of you procrastinators out there that are listening, so it's rooted in something. So you're not lazy because you're procrastinating. Usually procrastination has something more to do with perfectionism. So if you don't have the perfect condition to do something, you put it off. If you don't think you can do something perfectly, you put it off, or you just, you know, you don't do it. So I'll give you an example. For me, I did this with my writing. So I would say, oh, I need to be, you know, it needs to be a certain time of day. I can only write in the morning. I needed to be inspired. I needed to be in a certain mood to write. And I had, you know, romantic visions of, like, you know, renting a cabin and, you know, getting all this writing done. And it had to be that certain way because, you know, if I was just doing it at my desk, you know, it wasn't inspiring. I was looking out the window at my back alley and, you know, I just wasn't inspired. What I was doing was I was putting off, doing it. There was a little bit of, like, I just didn't want to do it. But really deep down, what the issue was is that I was afraid that my writing wasn't going to be good enough. I was afraid that people wouldn't like it. I was afraid of being judged for it. And I had built up a lot of this energy high standards for myself in my head as to what I expected my writing to be. And I just couldn't live up to what I had set up in my head. And so I was always putting it off. And really it was just making it more and more difficult to actually get started and causing me more anxiety. And anxiety actually is another sign of perfectionism. So that can be traced to not being feeling good enough. And you can never relax because deep down you don't feel like you're good enough. You feel like you're being judged by others. And then, so this can turn into the need to control as well. I think a lot of anxiety that's out there, especially for high achievers, is related to not being able to relax because, you know, for whatever reason, you feel like you're being judged. You feel like if you don't perform exactly the way that other people expect you to, you can't live up to those aspirations. And sometimes it's your own. You know, that I'll make that very clear to you. You know, sometimes the people in your life, it's not them, it's you. People, when you apologize for not doing something, you're not, meeting a high standard, and the person says, hey, you know, it's no worries. No, it's not a big deal, you know, but to you, it's a big deal. So a lot of that comes down to perfectionism, and you have this anxiety because you're afraid that, you know, you let somebody down and they're going to be upset, or you're going to be, you know, rejected. And that's where a lot of it stems from. So stemming from that as well is not being able to make decisions. Being indecisive can be another sign of perfectionism because you're so afraid of making the wrong choice that you just don't make any choice at all. And so it's all stemming from the same stuff. And on top of that is doing something or putting something off or trying something and then giving up too easily. So an example for that would be, you know, trying a hobby. So if there's something that interests you and you try it and, you know, you're not good at it right away or you don't take to it right away, you just give up because, you know, you make the excuse, oh, it's not for me, you know, I'm not meant to do this, you know, it's just not your thing or whatever excuse that you give when secretly really it is, you just couldn't deal with the fact that you weren't good at something, that you failed. And that's where a lot of perfectionists, you know, they really have that tendency to stay away from things that they don't think that they will be good at, so they just don't try it at all. And you're losing out on so much of life just because, you know, you're not doing something because you're not good at it. You know, even if you might enjoy it, like, I mean, painting is a perfect example of that. You know, nobody's out there is going to be the next Van Gogh. You're just doing it because it helps relax and enjoy doing it. And really, like, a lot of our anxiety probably stems from not allowing ourselves to do some of these really creative things because of either fear that it's not going to be good enough for your own standards or that other people will judge you. And it's just such a freaking shame. I mean, that's why a lot of creativity out there is being stifled, is because we are afraid of failing, and that is a travesty. So really not helpful. And that can be other things too. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be creative. It can be related to, you know, not applying for a job because you don't think you'll get it. You're not the perfect fit, or you don't have all of the, you know, you don't tick all the boxes. You know, if you're too afraid of trying, then of course you're not going to get it. So it doesn't hurt to try. The perfectionists really don't have the self-esteem and the self-assurance to try something, because if they fail, it to them, it means that they're bad. You know, they did something wrong, and it really stops them from being able to stop us. I'm definitely in the boat from possible opportunities. Like, I just applied for a job and I thought I bombed the interview, and and I didn't even think I was going to get it because I was so new to the province, and I somehow managed to get the job. So you never know. But if I had allowed my perfectionistic ways to think, okay, well, I'm new to this province, I have no seniority, I'm not going to get the job. Or, you know, like once I went through the interview and, you know, and didn't do well, like, I mean, I could have just like walked out in the middle of it because I thought I was bombing it. And I didn't think I was going to get it, but, you know, I did. So I have, like I said, I've done a lot of work around it. So I've been able to try to mitigate some of the feelings. I still have the feelings, but it doesn't stop me from doing the things that I want to try. So that's one of the things that can be part of the process of being a perfectionist. Another one is constant reassurance seeking. So always needing external validation from somebody outside of yourself. So that can be your partner, or, you know, parents, or, you know, in your career, it could be your job. So you're constantly, as a perfectionist, you're constantly needing to be reassured over and over and over again that you're, you know, whatever that area is that you're unsure about. So if it's relationships, you know that, you know, you are loved, you are getting enough affection, and you have this constant kind of need that's never satisfied, that, you know, you need to hear from other people, okay, I love you, or whatever it is. At work, you know, you constantly are striving for the next promotion. You know, you're never happy with what you're in. So you're always looking towards the future. You're always looking for what's higher up. And getting, you know, awards, or, you know, if it's an athletic thing, you know, if it's your fitness, you know, like, meeting these milestones of, you know, always like the next, you know, triathlon or marathon, and getting the highest number, and, you know, never being satisfied with what you've accomplished in the meantime. So that's, you know, another really unhealthy aspect that perfectionism can bring to your life. And yeah, it's just needing to feel worthy and seeking your worthiness through other people or other achievements. And that's where the really unhealthy behavior stems from. Another area of perfectionism that can be, you know, a sign is overcompensating or explaining or justifying yourself to others. So like I said, if you're, you know, say that you had made a promise to a friend to do something, a favor for them, and then you couldn't do it. It's not just a simple like, hey, you know, I couldn't make it, or I couldn't do it, or, you know, a simple sentence. You have to launch yourself into this huge explanation of, oh, well, this happened and this happened and this happened, and then this is why I couldn't do it. You know, like your friend, you know, if this is out of character for you and you're not doing this sort of thing very often, your friend is going to be understanding, right? So if the shoe was on the other foot, and your friend, you know, who is mostly, you know, able to, you know, do favors for you and reliable, you know, you're not going to need a huge, big justification from them as to why, you know, they couldn't meet with you or whatever. But for yourself, you just feel the need to justify all of your behaviors, whatever that is. You know, if you make a mistake at work, and all of us are guilty of this, you know, like if you make a mistake and, you know, like, oh, you need to tell people like, oh, like, you know, this happened because, you know, this guy did this and then I couldn't do that. And you launch yourself into this big story, And basically what you're doing is justifying this mistake when really it was enough to say, you know what, I messed up, right? But perfectionists have a really hard time admitting when they messed up. They have to justify it with a reason. It has to be, you know, you have to understand why I messed up, because what really is stemming underneath that is that you are trying to make sure that you're still okay, because you're not a bad person. You know, if you had just messed up, like say that you just weren't paying attention and you screwed up, you know, it's not usually a huge deal, but to a perfectionist, it is a big deal, because to them, they don't see themselves as making a mistake. They attach themselves to the mistake, and that means that they're a bad person. They didn't do a bad thing. They were a bad thing. And that's where a lot of the unhealthy behavior comes from. It's personifying what our actions are and making us feel like we are the problem. We are the issue. And that's why it's really hard for perfectionists to mess up, because they don't feel like they're good enough people as is. They don't feel like they are allowed to make mistakes, because it makes them bad people, which is really, really sad that there's so much going. It's rampant. Like, I see it all the time, even in people who aren't necessarily what I said, you know, the classic perfectionist is, but somebody who really needs to justify whenever they do something wrong because they feel like they're a bad person. That's really what it stems from. And another really sad aspect of being a perfectionist is being difficult, being vulnerable. So, you know, that vulnerable statement of saying, hey, I messed up, or, you know, it can be involving sharing your feelings, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm really sad, I'm really upset, I'm really this, you know, it's really hard for people who have perfectionist tendencies to share their feelings, because we've gotten so good at wearing masks. And we've gotten so good at building up armor and showing the world only the very best of ourselves and not allowing anybody to see the cracks and letting us, you know, let other people see when, you know, we're upset or angry or frustrated or, you know, any of that, because it means that we're not perfect, right? So if somebody sees that I'm mad about something, or if somebody sees that I'm sad about something, or if somebody, you know, if I'm having a hard time and, you know, I really want to share my feelings with somebody, like I can't let myself do that, because if I do, that person will know I'm not perfect. And then that person will use it as some sort of, you know, control, or, you know, they'll use it as ammo for later or whatever. That's kind of what that's where it went in my head. I'm not sure how other people feel, but basically, you know, not having that perfect persona means that it's weakness, and weakness equals not good. Again, it's like that inner child that, you know, she can only see things in black and white. So if she does something bad, that means that she's bad. And black and white thinking is also a classic sign of perfectionism as well. And that's what I personally believe, it's more of an inner child wounding. That, you know, children who are around the age of 10, they can kind of only see the world in black and white. And a lot of our trauma stems from childhood. And so a lot of it stems, you know, they stuck in that time. So that's why we see some things as black and white, because there's things that haven't healed yet. Yeah, it means, you know, you're investing all of this energy in masking your flaws and masking everything. And even that is exhausting, you know, it's just trying to maintain this perfect persona to the world. And, you know, it takes so much energy to, you know, hide all of your flaws. And, you know, if it involves like covering things up or lying or whatever, like, and then you can't keep track of who's seen what. And it's exhausting. And it's not sustainable. Like, you know, you're going to crack at some point, and, you know, heaven help the poor person that you, you know, fall apart in front of, because, you know, it's going to happen. Another aspect of perfectionism that people can fall into the trap of is having constant goals. And so focusing on the next thing to achieve when, you know, whenever you achieve a milestone, you know, like you might be happy for a day or two, but then, you know, you're already focusing on, okay, well, what's next? Really, you're not fulfilled with what you've achieved. You know, when people And I noticed this in my own work when my own personal work, like doing a lot of, work on myself and, my behavior and my, mental states and all of this stuff, all of this personal work that I'd done, when people would comment and say, like, you've done so much work, like, I didn't even feel it. I would be like, what? I haven't done that much work. Like, I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to do this. And I didn't even believe other people when they said, you've done so much work on yourself. Like, I didn't believe it because I was always focused on fault, like, the next thing that I needed to work on. And I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't happy with where I was. I wasn't, I never gave myself a clap on the back or anything like that. I never celebrated where I was. And that's because I wasn't happy with where I was. I wasn't accepting of where I was, and I needed to work on the next thing. There was always something else. And this can be anything. It doesn't have to be personal work. It can be, like I said, like fitness, if you're, running marathons and you're never happy with your time. If you're in a career and you're always trying to move up the ladder and you're never satisfied with what rung you're in, with relationships, if, you're always working on your relationship and it's never you're never satisfied with it. And it's basically like, you're not happy with where you're at. You can't accept where you're at. When it comes to weight for myself as well, I was never happy with my weight. So I was always looking forward to when I'm thinner. And it just makes you miserable. You're not, and again, it just stems from not feeling good enough as you are, not accepting yourself as you are where you're at, not celebrating all of the things that you've overcome. It's always the need. And like I said, there's no problems with having goals. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have goals, but when you're not happy and you're not fulfilled with the goals that you've achieved and you don't let yourself just sit and relish in what you've achieved before having to move on to something else, that's the sign that there's something wrong. These high standards are basically impossible for you to live up to all the time. You either exhaust yourself by trying to be that perfect person and keep up these appearances, and be the best to everybody. Or when you fail, which is inevitable, you spiral into this shame cycle or guilt and, for not having lived up to these impossible standards that you've set for yourself. And then, you just go on this, and then it's even more dramatic because, your ego just doesn't have the self-assurance. And so when you do fail, it's just, it hits you so much harder. The high standards you set for yourself make you highly critical of yourself, obviously. You're never happy with, what you've achieved. You always have to be working on something, like I said. And it makes you really critical of yourself, but it also makes you really critical of other people. I found that I was really judgy of other people who didn't have the same high standards that I did. And in some areas of my life, that's most people. Like I was very, when it came to doing, personal development, I had this kind of like judgy kind of atmosphere, you haven't done any work on yourself. You haven't done this yet. And I would look down my nose at other people, who hadn't done any of this work and not accepting that, hey, maybe A, they don't need it because it works as much of a mess as I was, but also just the fact that maybe, they're happy with where they're at and it's not for me to judge where they're at. Everybody's, life is their own journey, their own path. And just because I don't think, they don't meet my high standards doesn't mean that they aren't happy with theirs. And this is something that can be really, really, it can be poison to other people. Having your own goals is great, but expecting other people to have those same goals, that's where it becomes a problem. And that, like I said, that can be anything. If you're really into fitness and, you have a friend who isn't, and they're just happy, doing yoga or going for walks, and in your head you think, oh, but it would be so much better if they blah, blah, blah. Like, they don't have to have your same goals. And if anything, there might be that if you have perfectionistic tendencies, like if some of these things are ticking the boxes, then chances are, you know, they're probably a better person for you to judge, you know, what's a healthy mentality than your own, unfortunately. The problem is that many of us have grown up with the same conditioning, and many of us feel that we should all be doing that. And this, the helicopter parenting is where I think a lot of that has come to light. You know, like every mom thinks that she needs to be the perfect wife, the perfect mom, the perfect, you know, career, employee, whatever, and you have to do all of these things, and you know, you're just not capable of doing that for a long period of time. And showing, and each, you know, in the group of mom groups, when that mom seems that she has everything put together, you know, chances are she doesn't, and she's just hiding it really well. But you don't see that, and you feel that you're not measuring up, and so you have to be that perfectionist mother too, and that's where all of it comes from. Right? None of us are showing our cards. We're all wearing masks, which I think is ironic that right now in life we're all wearing masks. But we're not showing who we really are. We're not showing anybody our vulnerability in the cracks. And so everybody thinks that they need to be measuring up to what they think that other people are, when really you'd be doing everybody a favor by just saying, hey, you know what? Like, I didn't measure up to my own goals. You know, like if you're a mom and you just, you know, oh my God, I just can't keep my house clean, and my kids, you know, watch the iPad all day and blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, the more we're able to admit our mistakes, quote unquote, or our, you know, imperfections, you know, the better it would be for society, because we don't have to live up, we don't have to measure up to what conditioning we've been taught, we've been instilled to believe is normal. That's not normal. It's not normal for families to function like that. Back in the day, like, you know, families were raised by villages and everybody pitched in, and like, it's impossible to be working full time and having a family life and all of this stuff. And now with kids homeschooling, I'm just like, I can't even. I'm so in awe of moms right now and parents like who are doing this. And I'm so in awe of you, and you, I want you to hear, are doing an amazing job. Like, that I can't even convey how proud and in awe I am of people who are able to do this and are just functioning. Like, we're all just functioning right now. Nobody has to be perfect. And if anything that COVID has taught us is that nobody is perfect right now. We are all just trying to get through it. And it's a permission slip to say, you know what, I'm doing my best that I'm doing right now, and that's all I can do. And maybe after all of this is said and done, we can maybe look at how we as a society have been functioning, because nobody's perfect and we've all been set up to think that we should be. And it's not. Mental health issues are definitely going to be cropping up. The high standards that we set for ourselves sometimes is basically a form of protection, right? So if we do everything perfect, nobody can point out our mistakes. Nobody can say that we're doing it wrong. Because for me, like, I had to be perfect. Like, if I made a mistake at work, I was just like gutted. I was so upset. And I had to try and do everything, quote unquote, perfectly, because if I didn't, you know, somebody would point out, oh, you didn't do this right. And it was just a hit to my ego, and I just couldn't take it. So really, for anybody who thought perfectionism was just making lists and having a clean house, it doesn't sound so great now, does it? Yeah, it's perfectionism is not a badge of honor. It's more like a tattoo of pain. That's really what perfectionism is. It's not being able to cope with who you think you are, and so you have to pretend to be this other person that does everything perfectly. And like I said, I listed all of these off because I was struggling with all of them. I ticked off pretty much all of those boxes. For me, my perfectionism was my inner child who never felt good enough, trying to protect herself from being rejected. But that's what she was doing. She was trying to protect herself from being rejected or being criticized. She never felt good enough. And she had black and white thinking. And, you know, if she didn't perform perfectly, she wouldn't be loved. That's basically what that boiled down to. You know, like me as a child, you know, I equated praise as love, because I grew up in a household where, you know, it wasn't healthy and I had a lot of abuse. And so to me, what love meant was, you know, was the time when I did something that I got praise from. That was when I got attention. That is what I equated to love. And in my world, getting good marks gave me praise. And so getting good marks meant I was loved. So that's how, like, little inner child Shannon was able to navigate her way through the world. And so that's how she survived. She got good marks. And so that became her persona. That became her identity, you know, getting good marks, being a good student. And that's basically how she equated to being a good daughter. And, you know, I know I'm not alone in that. And for me, and that kind of, as I grew older, like, it kind of started getting into all areas, you know, my relationships, my health, my career, everything, you know, it started going into all of it and having to try and get praise externally, because that's what love was. And so if I could have a body that other people would comment on, or if I could eat perfectly that other people would comment on or would approve of, everything was about approval and recognition in that way. I wasn't able to give that to myself because I didn't know what it was as a child. I didn't learn a healthy way to love myself. And so that was the only way I learned how. And really what it did is it just proved, whenever you are looking for external validation, you're going to be disappointed. If you can't satisfy your own self, if you can't make yourself happy, you're never actually going to be happy. And that's really what happened to me, is I wasn't seeing the world through rose-colored glasses. I was seeing the world through shit-colored glasses, and everything I looked at was shitty. You know, nothing was good enough because I wasn't able to satisfy myself internally. I wasn't happy internally. And it was my inner child who was desperately trying to make things perfect in an attempt to make myself happy. She didn't know. It was all she had known was to try and protect herself from criticism, even constructive criticism, because, like I said, she couldn't handle it. It meant she wasn't loved, it meant she wasn't good enough. So if any of this sounds like you, and I know there's probably a few people that have resonated with this, unfortunately. I know there's a few people in my life who have resonated with this as well. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that this is how we've been conditioned to think and feel and have been raised, you know. And a lot of it stems from our upbringing, right? You know, school, getting good marks, you know, and being punished if you don't get good marks. And, you know, that's our teachers and our parents. You know, we're conditioned to believe that hard work and intelligence is good, and laziness and not getting good marks, or, you know, or sports or whatever it is that you got approval for, you know. And if your parents were overachievers, then you probably tended to be an overachiever as well. Or if you were abused or neglected. And so that, you know, if you got good marks, that possibly bought you positive attention. And so, you know, our parents, again, are well-intentioned. And so if they were, you know, giving us praise based on our hard work and our marks and being good students, being good daughters and being well-behaved, you know, like, they were just doing the best that they could. They wanted us to have a good life. And this is how they thought that it meant. You know, if we got good marks and got into good colleges and got good jobs, we would be happy. And they were just doing the best that they could. But really, you know, what it did for some of us is it just made us not feel good enough ever. And I want you to know that if you do feel like you're a perfectionist, you know, it's not, this isn't your fault, right? as a child, this is how you learn to get love, and this is how you learn to get ahead, and this is how you learn to accept yourself. So your inner child was just doing the best that she could. That being said, now that you know, if you could talk to your inner child and know that she could hear you, what would you say to her? If you had a little girl inside of you and she never felt good enough and the only way she felt safe was to overachieve or to do things perfectly, what would you tell her now? How would you change her? How would you parent her to help her feel that she's good enough as she is? And how does this translate into your life now? So if you have a lot of goals in your life, or if you have a lot of things that you want to achieve, I just want to pose this question to you, is what would happen if you didn't achieve them? What would happen if you just decided to, coast for the rest of your life and everything stay the same? How does that feel? And it's okay if that doesn't feel good. The question is, why doesn't it feel good? Is it because you would miss out on opportunities, you wouldn't experience as full of a life if you kept everything the same, or is it because you wouldn't feel like you accomplished enough? So it's really asking some of these questions, would you feel less worthy if you didn't achieve some of the things that are on your list to achieve, if you just stayed the same? And I really encourage you to talk to yourself the way that you would a child, because, if you didn't get that job that you applied for, if you applied for something else or, promotion or whatever and didn't get it, what would you tell if this was your child who applied for a job and didn't get it? What would you say to her? Would you tell her she sucked and she should have worked harder, or she should have studied this, or she shouldn't? The things that we actually tell ourselves, we wouldn't say to anybody else, right? We wouldn't say that to our best friend who, their marriage broke up. Would you say, oh, this is your fault? No. But if when it happens to us, it's so easy to blame ourselves. And that's where the issue is, right? So if you treated yourself with the same kindness that you would treat your, a friend or, a sibling or, your own child, you wouldn't talk to them like that, right? And we all have little versions of ourselves inside of us that need to hear this positive self-talk. Stop looking for external validation. Stop asking other people to give us, the love and reassurance and words of affirmation. Stop looking for that externally. Or, if it's a promotion, or, if it's fitness and, you're fitting into a smaller set of jeans, or, stop looking for that external validation and start giving it to yourself. Just because you are the way you are, you're perfect the way you are. You don't need to achieve in order to be accepted. And that's what that little girl inside or little boy inside needs to hear, is that you're okay just as you are. Of course, if you want to have goals because you want to experience certain things, you want to feel a certain way, that's great. But if you don't accept yourself the way you are, then there's a problem. And that's what needs to be really looked at. So, now here's the question is, what are some of the things you can do to start overcoming perfectionism? And the first thing you need to do with that is acknowledge that it's there, obviously. You're not going to get anywhere unless you actually accept that you have these tendencies, and it's time to take the mask off. It's time to be vulnerable. You're beautiful the way you are. I'm beautiful the way I am. And my imperfections is what actually makes me human, and it's what makes me me. And I'm just starting, after doing all of this stuff, I'm just starting to really believe that. Obviously, working with somebody as a professional, if you do feel that you have these tendencies, definitely worth talking to. There's lots of exercises that you can do. Another thing that you can do is no more negative self-talk. So I completely put a ban on bashing myself. We can't always control, obviously, our negative thoughts, like our monkey mind just kind of goes, but we can control what comes out of our mouth. And I don't want to hear anybody putting themselves down, saying they're an idiot, saying, there's a little girl in there that can hear you. So every time you put yourself down, she hears that. If you had a child and you put your child down every time she messed up, you know how she would turn out. And yet we talk to ourselves that way. You know, we say, oh, I'm an idiot. Oh, I'm a... No, stop it right now. Make a commitment to yourself to stop putting yourself down. Even if you think it, you don't need to say it. That's, you know, make that commitment right now. And then the next area that you can help with working with perfectionism is picking an area in your life that you want to start working on. So I, as an example I'll give you is, I chose writing. So when I first started doing this perfectionist work, my perfectionist tendencies were coming into it. I did all of the exercises, I did everything, and you know, it was just like, okay, that was not the point. The point was basically to mess up. So, you know, I was like, I wanted to work on my fitness, and I wanted to work on the eating, and I wanted to work on my career, and I wanted to work on my writing. It was like, no, pick one area that you want to start working on that you have a perfectionist tendency. So for me, I chose writing. And then pick a particular behavior in that area. So for me, it was procrastinating. For you, it might be, you know, the black and white thinking, or, you know, the negative self-talk, or, you know, whatever. But that's what I chose, because procrastinating with writing was something that I noticed that my perfectionistic tendencies did. I didn't focus on anything else. That was the only thing I did. And then the next thing I did is I made a SMART goal. And so for me, I chose to write once a week for one hour. And so that was regardless of, you know, whether or not I was in the mood, and if, you know, what I wrote was crap, like I would still sit down for that hour, even if what I was writing was garbage, I still made that commitment to write for the hour. I didn't use any excuses. And, you know, it's funny because I've been putting off writing a book for years. And through this technique, I actually managed within a year and a half, just writing once a week for an hour, I managed to write a book. So I actually got probably further ahead by doing that than what I would have with the procrastinating. So as a perfectionist, you have to have everything perfect. You know, at the end of the year, I had a book, as opposed to if I just sat there and just been anxious about it. So there are some other tips you can do as well. I really suggest is picking up a hobby, and so preferably something that is creative, and do it really badly. So if you have an interest in drawing, but you're not good at it, do it anyway. You know, like, who cares? Failure is the new cool. And if anything, like, the worse you are, the better you're going to overcome that perfectionistic need, because you're going to suck and it's going to be fine. You're going to find that you didn't die and everything was okay. So whatever that looks like for you, if you have an interest in it, if it's piano or, you know, water skiing or whatever it is that, you know, you have an interest in but you've been afraid to try, you're not going to be good at it. Go and do it. And, you know, at least give it a good, you know, don't quit right away. You know, if it's relaxing to you, or even if it's not, you know, it's going to be a really good exercise to get over that hump of needing to do everything perfectly all the time. The adopting the 80% is the new 100%. So if you're giving yourself 100% all of the time, try doing 80%. So for example, what does that look like? So that can look like doing something good enough. So say that, you know, when you write emails, you have to like obsessively, like, you know, compulsively spell check. Well, how about you send an email and you don't do that? You don't proofread it. You just send it. How would that feel? And then sit with that discomfort and be okay with it. And did anybody die? No. If you had a spelling mistake, oh my God. Right? Or, you know, say that you have to be punctual all the time or very, very early. See what it feels like if you show up 5 minutes late. Like, just, you know, get crazy and show up 5 minutes late and see how that feels. Or if, you know, it's something that, you know, you always have to research something when you're buying it. You know, if you have to always read the reviews, try buying something without reading a review and see how that feels. Does it make you feel really uncomfortable to buy something and say that it wasn't the perfect whatever it was? Sit with that. Like, those are all little things that you can do to help get you over the hump of this. And then another thing is celebrating your wins. So whatever it is that you've done, you know, any accomplishment that you've done, even if it's just, you know, in the pandemic times, even if it's just like curling your hair, give yourself like a freaking win. Like, you celebrate the shit out of that because you deserve it. You know, start celebrating all of the achievements that you have accomplished, because it stops you from focusing on the next thing and it keeps you in the present. it allows you to actually really accomplish what you need to accomplish and feel what you need to feel. So, and I really encourage you to be patient with this as you're going through it, because it's not going to come perfectly. You're going to have perfectionistic, you know, falling off the wagons. But really what you need to do is just accept yourself and accept that this is okay. I think a lot of us are out there that have had this, and I just want to say that you are perfectly imperfect the way you are. So I want to say thank you so much for listening. And if you are wanting to learn more, I would be happy to chat further about that. You can find me on Facebook at Empowered Hearts Mentoring, as well as on Gmail as well, hearttoheartmentoring@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram as well. So I hope you guys all had a great weekend. And here is to a 80% great March. And everybody take care. Bye-bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good afternoon, good evening, everybody. I'm Nicole Whitney, and it's News for the Soul time on Leap Year 2008. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained, with a marathon of shows planned for starting right now. And this is kind of like the hors d'oeuvre before the meal. Brad Yates is back, EFT wizard. Brad Yates, that's what I call him from my experience doing his EFT sessions. Holy smokes. And we're here to make a big announcement right here, right now, on Leap Day 2008, that I promised that we would make, and by gosh, we're making it.
We did
it's
it.
It's happening. Yay, love beyond belief, it's in existence.
Love, oh, exciting and new.
You know, a ticker tape parade or something is in order, but we'll work on that. In the meantime, lovebeyondbelief.com is the website. Here's Brad now. Hello, Brad. How are you doing today?
I am doing excellent, thanks, Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing freaking awesome. Thank you for asking.
Do you feel like a huge weight has been lifted off your shoulders?
Massive. Literally, yes, indeed I do. Because it's been a year and 1 month.
A year and 2 weeks.
Yes.
Basically.
You said, hey, let's do this great Love Beyond Belief program and launch it, and then it's a few weeks later. So here we are. This is huge, huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm really excited because in finalizing the audio for the program and stuff, I was remembering how awesome it was, and it was an amazing program.
Cool.
So let's share what it is about. Brad.
Well, what the world needs now. It's all about me singing. No, don't worry. I don't. As far as I remember, it's been a long time now, but I don't think I actually sang in any of this song.
I think you did.
Did I? Well, you know, it's always possible. You know, I never know what's gonna happen when we start doing the rounds. But based on the idea that the world needs more love, and people kept asking for more love, you know, and especially after Money Beyond Belief, we said, what about love? I want more love in my life. And darn it, if Nicole and I didn't come together and say, well, let's give it to them. And
love beyond belief.
Love beyond belief.
Most, you know, we don't want to settle for mediocre love.
Well, that's, you know, got to give credit to Dr. Joe Vitale for coming up with a name when we got together and decided to do a program about clearing, and he had came up with the name Money Beyond Belief. And I just love that because it's the whole idea of beyond belief, meaning like one in one sense, there's like so much of it. It's unbelievable how much there is. But also it's what there is beyond our current limiting beliefs. So love beyond belief is the love that's possible beyond the current limiting beliefs. And so this program was about going through and clearing out those limiting beliefs about ourselves and why we couldn't or shouldn't have more love in our lives.
And this was really exciting for a conscious community kind of crowd, too, because, you know, that becomes a huge thing when you step on this path and you start evolving into, you know, a more aware person. The standard kind of ways of connecting and meeting partners, potential partners, that kind of thing, you know, it doesn't kind of work anymore. So
yeah. Well, if we're coming from old paradigm, our old paradigm thinking, then the kind of people that we're attracting are, you know, people at that level. It's, you know, like we joked, I don't know if we joked in one of the teleseminars about the Jerry Maguire line, you complete me. It's like,
yeah.
You know, one broken person looking for another broken part that just sort of fits. It's like, well, my shattered edge kind of fits in with your shattered edge. And it's like, no, I want to allow myself to be as healthy as possible and therefore, using law of attraction, attract to me someone who is likewise healthy.
Two wholes make a powerful, I mean, it becomes a power, empowered connection where it's like a third entity. I mean, it's
yeah.
You know, empowerment to the power of three or something. I mean,
right.
It's a whole different thing. And that's the thing is to get, I mean, if you want to reach for something that's already within your grasp, like you say, you don't need to grow to become the person to do that. But this is about growing to be the next level up.
Yeah, we're not settling anymore.
Hey,
no. Get away from this whole settling thing. The universe is so abundant with so many good things, and, you know, it's saying, okay, what do I, you know, I don't want just something passable. I want love beyond belief. I want a great relationship. I want the sort of relationship that fairy tales are made out of. That
and
sort of
the thing that I thought was cool about this, because this is where, you know, anything that's really sort of close to where you're, you know, the closest to the heart, the closest to being open and vulnerable, and in those states, that's where all our stuff comes up. And so much, especially around relationship and every past relationship, you know,
yeah.
All the luggage that's piled on there.
Yeah.
And with your EFT sessions, it was about removing all of that stuff so that you could
yeah.
bring it in, right? So
yeah, going in and really loving ourselves first. And because, you know, if we don't love ourselves, what kind of a partner are we going to attract? You know, how do we expect someone else to love us more than we love ourselves? And so really getting to that place of seeing ourselves as lovable. And the wonderful thing is that affects so many areas of life. You know, it's not just about relationships then. It's then in terms of career and friendships and family and finances and health. It can cover so many things when we really learn to love ourselves and see ourselves as lovable.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to say, too, we should probably explain, because we're sort of barreling through, you know, Love Beyond Belief, which is now online at lovebeyondbelief.com.
Yay!
EFT, you know, and how...
Kudos to Nicole, because Nicole set the website up and did all the detail work, and I just sat back and gave some encouraging comments over the phone. You go, girl. Wish I could be there and help.
You did your brilliant thing a year and 2 weeks ago. So. It all worked itself out in the math. So... Now, why don't we talk a little bit about, for the newbies, about what the heck EFT is and why the heck we should be doing this to get love beyond belief?
Yeah. So EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, is this amazing technique developed by Gary Craig from the foundational work of psychologist Dr. Roger Callahan, who discovered that negative emotions are caused by disruption in our energy system. Now I'm going to explain that a little more because it's a little technical.
Oh, really?
For thousands of years in Chinese medicine, they've been saying that there's this flow of energy that runs along pathways in our body called meridians, just like blood flows along veins and arteries. And when this energy gets disrupted, we experience illness. So in acupuncture, they stick needles in key points along the body to stimulate the flow of energy so that wellness is restored. And Roger Callahan was working with a woman with a lifelong phobia of water, and by tapping on a point under her eye, found that that cleared up her phobia, much to his surprise. And he started working with a bunch of different clients and found that he could relieve so many different emotional issues by tapping on different points on the face and torso. So he created this system with all these algorithms, different order of points to tap for different issues. And one of his first students was a man named Gary Craig, who, thinking like an engineer, he had a degree in engineering from Stanford University, came and said, well, wait a minute, what if we just try tapping all of the points? There's only like 8 or 9 points that we use, and if we just tap them from top to bottom, what happens? And you get the same great results, and you don't have to go through the process of trying to figure out which points to tap. So he called this simplified form emotional freedom technique, or EFT, and it is sweeping the world. People all around the world are finding EFT to be an amazing tool for so many different things, for letting go of emotional issues, for letting go of physical issues. There's a new movie coming out about it called Try It On Everything with some of the people from The Secret. People from The Secret like Jack Canfield, Joe Vitale, Bob Doyle, who all find EFT to be an amazing tool for clearing out the resistance that blocks us from using the law of attraction in a much more effective way in our lives.
Yes, very exciting that all of that's coming to the forefront, too, because, you know, I mean, The Secret never dealt with any of this kind of stuff, being in, you know, vibrational resonance on the subconscious level with things, and, you know.
Right.
It's like consciousness 101.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the law of attraction teaching focuses, on, and admittedly so, on the crucial thing of focusing on what you want and saying, okay, what is that I want? And I want to get into the good feeling that I anticipate having with that. Why so many people find that that doesn't quite work for them is because they probably have unconscious reasons why they can't totally feel good about this. It's not safe. I'm not worthy. I've had a bad experience with it in the past. And so that, you know, that's kind of talking about the elephant in the room. That's sort of the elephant in our energy system that no one's talking about. And
yeah.
Like, you know, I'm spending all this time focusing positively on what I want. Why is it not showing up? Well, there's resistance there. The extent to which we are not experiencing what we really want is the extent to which we're resisting it. So EFT is such an amazing tool for going in, finding that resistance and clearing it out so that when you are visualizing or imagining your positive outcome, there isn't that yeah, but negativity going on in our energy system.
That's right. And, you know, for me, before I kind of stumbled over your work and what you do, but, I mean, for many years...
I'm sorry, did I leave it there, lying there for you stumbled?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when you pick the darn thing up, please. No, I'm kind of stumbled over it. Leave it out. That's good. But for years, I've been, you know, on this show talking to, I mean, conscious, if you will, scientists talking about the subconscious being, you know, the one that's really driving the boat, and that our biggest work is doing the clearing on that plane. But that's, you know, our biggest work that we can be doing in our entire life right now. So that and talking to leaders like James Ray for years about this stuff. But,
yeah.
You know, and they all say the same thing, that that's the most important work. But I just didn't want to be like, you know, going full on to kind of clearing your caca camps or whatever, you know, like I wanted something that was easy and quick and bada bing, bada boom, get it done, you know, and
yeah.
There you were.
Hello.
I mean, I've done some sessions on issues, you know, tried some of your teleclasses and had results like an hour later. I mean, what can do that?
Yeah.
So for me, it was just awesome. It's you know, pretty busy.
Yeah, EFT is just, that's what's so great about it is that it is such a simple technique. It's easily learned. You know, we're working at it, you know, rather than just talking about issues, we're using a physical component, using the tapping on the energy system. You know, our body is programmed in this way. We get this stuff trapped in energy. We have, there are now tools to release that energy and really set ourselves free. You know, abundance and love and positive energy is our natural state. So anything that is not that, any kind of lack in any area of our lives, is not the true nature of ourselves. It's something that's been applied and gotten stuck on there over time. So to have a tool that, you know, that's right there at any time that you can start tapping and start clearing that stuff out, and you can feel the sensation. If you're feeling stressed, you know, and stress just being one way, one manifestation of all these different kinds of things that we experience, we can just feel that shift happening right there and then. You know, it's so great when I'm talking to folks and they're really upset about something, and, you know, in a matter of minutes they're like, I'm sorry, what was I upset about again? Mm-hmm. They're just total shift.
And you know what? You have to have the direct experience of that to really know it. I mean, we can, you know, sit here explaining it so we're blue in the face, but, you know, I really got it once I had that experience where I saw results change a half an hour later. Just because I was sitting and tapping on my, I mean, when I first heard about it and first tried doing it, I thought, God, I feel like an ass, you know, tapping on my head and saying this stuff. I look like an idiot. My kids think I've really lost it. That's it. Mom's gone. She's toast. And then I had the direct experience of an instant change because I did that. And from then on, I didn't care how stupid I looked. I was in. So, you know, having the direct experience, even if they don't go to lovebeyondbelief.com, they could go to your site and try some of the free tappings or something. Like, to have the direct experience, don't just sort of, you know, listen to us, but try it, see if it works for you. Because it sure worked for me and lots of other people. So, actually,
it's funny how
all those
things.
Websites.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we should give out those websites before we get babbling away here. We're already 9:15. Again. Oh, okay.
It's 9:15 somewhere in New Brunswick. It's
9:15. Well, technically, it's 9:15 for some people listening right now.
Yeah.
There we go. I just knew that. Okay. BradYates.net, that's where you go for Brad's e-tappings, as it were. He's got some sample ones and explanations on their graphs and charts and all kinds of lovely things. And lovebeyondbelief.com, that's where we've launched the program.
It's launched.
Well, you know, it's yes, it's launched. We are going to have the affiliate program in place and all that stuff, but that's not up yet. So updates to follow, but it's available and it's awesome. And we have thrown in bonus things and all kinds of yummy surprises.
Yep. And over the past year, we both got an email saying, okay, so Love Beyond Belief, it's coming out, right? You said it would be available after you finished the teleseminar series. Like, yes, it's coming. And I think for the last 5 months in my newsletter, my monthly newsletter, I've said, Love Beyond Belief, it's coming. Really? Any moment now. Here, look, don't miss it. What? It's coming.
Stay tuned to it, yes. But it is here now.
You know, it took Leap Day, a day that just doesn't come along but every 4 years or so, and to finally get it out there.
That's right. We had a solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse, and Leap Day. The planets have aligned, and we're good to go. So I can tell them about what we did, because it was originally a four-week course that we did with a special group of people. And over a period of 5 weeks, because it was so cool that we ended up doing another session at the end. And it was amazing watching the evolution of, you know, the participants as we were going through and the things that were happening for people. It was really cool.
And the various states of the people were in, there were people who hadn't been in a relationship in years, people who were in a relationship they wanted to leave, people who were in a relationship that was good, they wanted to improve, and, you know, various states. And so in each of the weeks, I think we sort of had a different focus, main focus in each of the 4 weeks. And then, at the end of the 4 weeks, it's like, okay, let's do a fifth, just sort of to get real closure for this teleseminar series.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in each session going, you know, you got an hour of going through and some intense tapping on clearing different limiting beliefs that we have about relationships, clearing out old relationships, baggage that we're carrying from old relationships, clearing out reasons why we're not lovable, allowing ourselves to recognize ourselves as worthy and deserving of love, And I'm sure I must have done at least some guided imageries during the course.
Almost every week we had a guided imagery. Plus you had some other the steps, the law of attraction steps with your own action steps implemented
okay.
too in the end. So there was a bunch of things that we added in the end there.
Okay.
Hopefully that refreshes a memory cell in our friends.
It was a year ago. What? What are you looking at? Get off the lawn. I remember everything.
That's amazing. And
I think we had some fun in the process, too.
No.
Because I was hoping that might be one of the points that might interest people, is that it might be enjoyable to listen to. But
it was funny because as I was putting together the audio and you know, originally I think a year ago my intention was to kind of clean up all the audio and take out all the strange kind of bloopers, you know, kind of
mm-hmm.
thing out of it. And then I thought, no, that raises everybody's vibration. I don't care
right.
what Fred says. I'm leaving it in.
And I would always say leave it in. You know, it's you know the sessions come from spirit, so I trust that the flaws are all part of the divine perfection of it.
Exactly, and they are, and it just wouldn't be the same without them.
Yeah.
So it is live, unscripted craziness.
With some serious work put in there.
Well, everybody did work. We worked hard. I know that I felt a lot of energy moving in those sessions, and I really missed them when we stopped taping, you know, because we did it once a week and over the course of the 5-week period, and I missed it, you know, our weekly
mm-hmm.
sessions after that, because it was really powerful what we were doing. People were digging fairly deep into some pretty major issues around relationship, safety, and, you know, personal vulnerability and a lot of issues around that. So, very
relational
stuff.
Yeah, relationships are, you know, really bring up some of the most core stuff for us.
Yeah.
And
way deeper than going, you know, and trying to do abundance work or that kind of thing. This is far more to the core of your being.
Very, very personal stuff. And, you know, and so foundational for so many other things.
Yeah, because if it's your relationship, like you were saying, right, with yourself.
Yeah,
and it reflects onto everything else. Doing money courses or whatever you're trying to manifest. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there isn't. I don't think there's anyone who can't afford to love themselves more. I mean, that's why I love doing, you know, any of the courses that come up, any opportunity to do teleseminars or working with folks, is because it gives me an opportunity to expand myself and, you know, find myself more lovable, and thus treat myself with more love, which then means I have more love to give. You know, and the outside world is a reflection of what's going on inside. So as we love ourselves more, we naturally love other people more, and we naturally find other people loving us more.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And
that ain't so bad.
Yeah. And that's one thing that was palpable. The energy at the end of those sessions when we were finishing off, and when I was revisiting that audio last night just before launching it on the site today, you know, I'd forgotten about how intense and intangible that. I mean, there was love beyond belief right there.
There was
on the call.
And you could feel the love in the room, the site, the virtual room that we were all in.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of, I mean, that alone sets this work apart, you know, in some way. So that was very significant, and I haven't, you know, it's very profound. So we should mention what we did, what we've got here, because I just realized we're almost out of time. It's flown by already. it's like 5 minutes.
So you got your love beyond